Ghostly greetings, one and all, and welcome back to the Council of Elrond, a Lord of the Rings podcast, brought to you by the Melonheads, where we discuss all things Lord of the Rings, Tolkien, and Middle-earth related. To celebrate Halloween, in this spooky episode, we'll be looking at some of the most terrifying things in Tolkien's legendarium. We're talking vampires, werewolves, ghosts, giant spiders, and haunted fortresses. So if you're home alone or in the dark, be prepared. This is not for the faint-hearted. Mwahahaha! Don't worry, we'll go easy on you. I'm Dave, and with me is my brother and co-host, Johnny. Welcome. So, Johnny, before we get too spooky and dark, I just wanted to add something a little more lighthearted. Did you know that we have listeners in Nepal?
I did. Yeah. I was aware.
How about the Cayman Islands? Did you know we have listeners there too?
Oh, did they came in through the back door?
They came in the back door. even we have listeners in Bahrain. I think this is pretty cool. We actually have listeners in over 80 countries, including the tiny island of Jersey. But do you want to hear something even cooler?
I do.
So there is this little country slash region that I had never heard of before, where our podcast has actually reached, and it's called the U.S. Marine Outlying Islands.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Cork.
Yeah. No, we don't have any listeners in Cork.
Yeah, someplace never heard of it.
Never heard of it. West Cork, maybe, but this place, the U.S. Marine Outlying Islands, it's so tiny. Like the population, have a guess what the population is.
It's just like two guys and they both listen to our podcast. Is that what you're going to tell me?
No, I wish. But like, it's a small population. Have a little guess.
300 people.
Oh my God, you're bang on. 300, yeah.
You're joking?
No, 300.
Oh man, my guessing game has been on point recently.
Yeah, 300 people. Now, that's...
What? That's insane.
Yeah, mostly military people because it's marine outlying islands. But that's pretty cool, isn't it? Like, we actually have people in the military out in these tiny islands that are listening to the Melonheads talk shite about Lord of the Rings.
Well, you know, we're giving them some good advice, you know, worldly advice.
Yeah.
They can take that into their own lives and, you know, do with it what they will. Yeah. So that's really cool.
It is cool. Like, I don't know about you, but I sometimes just get stuck looking at the analytics of the podcast. I'm like, oh my God, this country's been added. This country's been added. Because at first it was like Ireland, Britain, US. Now you're getting countries that I've never heard of before. So I think it's pretty cool.
Mm. Yeah. And especially when you see countries where obviously English is not their first language. And you're kind of going, there's quite a few people in this country that are actually listening to our podcast. How, first of all, fair play to them if they understand English. But second, fair play to them if they understand like my and yours English.
Yeah.
I didn't even say that sentence correctly.
So, mine and yours. And yeah.
But yeah. My English and your English, yeah. So, I never thought that we'd have people from so many different random countries listen to us. So, I'm going to let it all go to my head now. I'm going to feel the power and I'm going to start, like, throwing around crazy statements.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So, I was thinking, guys, what I want you to do this week is tell a friend about this podcast. Maybe share it on Twitter or Instagram, while you're listening. You know, we'll always retweet, we'll always reshare if you know, mention us and say, like, this is a great podcast, I love it, whatever.
Get in touch and tell us where you're from. Tell us if we're looking through our analytics and we see, oh, we've got one listener in Marrakesh. Get in touch and be like, that's me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something like that.
Exactly. So, and if you know someone from a faraway country that you could recommend it to, go ahead. Do they like Lord of the Rings? Who cares?
Spread the word.
Exactly. As you know, we can ramble on about everything anyway.
Share the load. So,
yes. Please do. Share the load.
Share the podcast.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say that at the start of the episode. If you're chatting to a mate, just say, hey, by the way, I'm listening to this absolutely cracking podcast called The Council of Elrond. We want to get the word out there, guys. And of course, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review if you have time for that too. Thank you.
Mm. And of course, we should say thank you so much as well to all the people that already sponsor us on Buy Me a Coffee. And we really, really appreciate that as well. And as Dave and I have mentioned many times before, we really can't believe that people are even listening to us, never mind giving us a few quid every month. So that is such an amazing blessing that we are really thankful for. So thank you so much, guys.
Yes, thank you very much. Anyways, back to terrifying tales in Middle Earth. So Tolkien more often than not describes luscious fields and pastures, histories of trees and moments of silence and beauty, but when Tolkien got dark, in my opinion, he really went dark. For instance, let's look at the Barrow Whites. So, Johnny, what do you know about the Barrow Whites? You know plenty about these boys. I know you do.
Oh, I love the Barrow Whites. I love the way Tolkien describes. And I agree with you completely. When Tolkien goes dark, he just knows how to set the scene and to like really kind of get inside your head and be like, right, you're in this place now. You're looking around, you're lost, it's dark, it's misty, you can't see what's going on. You hear these little voices and you're not really sure where they're coming from. So that's kind of like...
You should work in a haunted house and like provide the narration. So lads, you're in this place and you hear this house and you're scared. I'm telling you, listen to me now, lads.
Look, you're proper scared. It's not just like, you know, you're being chased by your old resistor. It's nothing like that. It's like proper scary shit. So... yeah, I could definitely get a job in that, I'm sure. So what are we talking about? Barrow Whites. The Barrow Whites were basically kind of like the Nazgul. They're a bit scary now again. You know, other lads that were coming after you with knives and stuff. Kind of like these sort of spirits and ghosts. And they kind of, when we see them in the Lord of the Rings, they kind of just throw spells on our heroes, on the hobbits. And they suddenly... Frodo starts to get really tired. He doesn't really know what's going on, and then he just suddenly kind of wakes up and he's in this kind of this Barrow White's hoard, this little kind of cave area, and he's been like put under a spell, and they're just kind of there waiting to kind of sacrifice him or something. We don't really know what's going on. Yeah. But very scary lads altogether.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. They're basically the Barrow Whites are the bones of ancient kings and queens of Cardolan that were possessed by spirits sent by the Witch King. So the Witch King actually sent different spirits to possess these already dead bones to make them kind of come alive and whatnot. So these wights appeared as dark phantoms whose eyes were luminous and cold and whose voice was horrible yet hypnotic. Their skeletal hands had a touch like ice and a deadly grip. They slowly paced around their tombs whilst chanting, still wearing their gold which clanked against their bones. Victims under a white spell would lose their will. In this way, the Barrow Whites drew the living into the tombs of their downs. If an unlucky bypasser got lost and ended up in the Barrow Downs, they would be paralysed by the Whites. Like you said, our heroes, the hobbits, get drawn in and suddenly they're like knocked unconscious and they don't know what's going on. It is quite spooky. Like, the Whites would dress them in white robes and gold jewels as they would prepare a kind of ritualistic sacrifice. And, you know,
these Whites were like the Ku Klux Klan. Yeah. They're like
the Whites.
The Whites dressed in white robes. And Tolkien was really like, look, the Whites are bad. Don't trust the Whites. So
exactly. Yeah. Tolkien was wise to it. They also...
Yeah. Walter White we're talking about?
Yeah. The Walter Barrow Whites.
Walter and his family. Don't trust the Whites.
And I don't know if you mentioned it there as well, but they leave a sword over the throats of the hobbits while they slept as well. So, I don't know, it's kind of spooky, if you ask me.
Yeah, also, the hobbits all woke up from their little dream. Well, I mean, Frodo woke up, and he saw the other three lads just chilling there. And he also said that they were all, like, they had dressed them, if you remember. They had dressed the hobbits in white robes, and they also put like jewels on them and put rings on their fingers and stuff like that. And so Frodo woke up and he looked over and saw the other lads lying there on the ground, all dressed in white with jewels and stuff on, and then, as you said, with the big sword, one sword lying across the necks of all of the other hobbits. And pretty freaky scenario to kind of just wake up and be like, I think I've been roofied. what's going on?
Yeah, I've had nights like that before. But it does kind of...
The best nights.
It does kind of remind you of, I don't know, like Aztecs and stuff, like dressing up their victims or their sacrifices basically before.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know, that kind of thing where they put the like chain around their necks and then they bring them up the stairs and they carve out their heart. And it's just kind of...
Oh, yeah, but maybe at first they kind of lull them into this like false sense of, oh, I think these guys really like me. They're giving me like there's lovely clothes and these jewels and stuff. And then suddenly they're like, it doesn't that happen in one of the Pirates of the Caribbean as well, where Johnny Depp is like, they think he's a god and they're treating him like a god. And then basically they need to like, you know, give him everything he wants for a period of time, and then they're going to sacrifice him.
They're going to sacrifice and eat him because I think that makes them become, I don't know, that's what the gods want or something like that. I think they make him their chief.
And then like, he's there like, he's inspecting the fire that, or the stake where he's going to be burned. He's like, no, this is not good enough. We need more wood. It needs to be a huge fire, big flames, all this good stuff. And so kind of like that. So they're like treating them really nice, and then they're like, but we're going to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, oh no.
Actually, I think Aztecs, this, I could be wrong, but off topic again, but I think the people that were being sacrificed, I actually think they might have known they were being sacrificed and they wanted it, and it was kind of like an honor. But anyways.
Oh, right. Okay.
Neither here nor there, but
it's definitely not. It's somewhere.
It's somewhere, but it's far away from this podcast.
It's not here, not there, but it's definitely somewhere in some place in some time.
So I mentioned that the Barrow Whites do, they kind of did this ritualistic chant as well, as they kind of lured about or lurked about, I should say, about their own tombs. And in the...
Is it like USA, USA?
Yes, it's a very annoying chant. But in
especially
the...
when you're watching the Ryder Cup and Europe are losing horribly, man. And the Americans are chanting, you're like, oh, guys, just let us die in peace. Stop compounding the misery.
Yeah. Get in the hole.
You're like, the Americans were on absolute fire in the last Ryder Cup. It was so annoyed. I was
fair play to you guys.
Yeah. But like, I mean, also, that American team. Sorry, you guys, to interrupt your Lord of the Rings podcast with some golf talk. But the American golf team at the moment is insane.
So, yeah, it's
fair. Well done. Pretty insane. We'll get you next time.
Yeah. We'll have an owl. You're up.
Yeah, just doesn't have the same ring to it.
Anyways, so in the book, a Barrow White sings an eerie song that Gollum actually recites a few lines of in Peter Jackson's Two Towers. So I thought I would recite it here. So in the film, Gollum only like recites one or two lines, but the song goes...
Are you going to recite it as Gollum?
No.
Ah.
No, because this is as the Barrow White. So I'll recite it as myself. So, cold be hand and heart and bone, and cold be sleep under stone, never more to wake on stony bed, never till sun fails and moon is dead. In the black wind the stars shall die, and still on gold here let them lie, till the dark lord lifts up his hand over dead sea and withered land. I don't know, am I getting cold or did I just get some goosebumps there? But yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, no, as soon as you started I was like, oh, this is, I really enjoy that when Gollum's saying that to himself. Yeah, they're like trying to have a conversation with him, and he's just there like rambling off something on his own. This guy is definitely insane.
Never till sunflowers and moon is dead.
They do not see what lies ahead. Isn't that what it says? They do not see what lies ahead when sun is moon and something is dead.
I think they might. And moon is dead.
I think they probably changed it around. Yeah,
I think they do.
When sun is something and moon is dead. Yeah, because when you were reading it there, I was trying to... Because I remember, if I heard exactly what it was from the movie, I would have like noticed it more. I was like, that wasn't exactly the same way. But you know, they change different things to for the purpose of film. So yeah.
By the way, again, off topic, but I like the way how in the books, they have so many like songs and poems and things, and you could see how they really put them into the Hobbit movies. Like they put them in as songs and things, but like, it's very on the nose in the Hobbit movies, but then in the Lord of the Rings, they do it in little ways, like Aragorn might be just singing a little song, or someone's humming something, or Gandalf is going, the road goes out. Like, it's very kind of obvious, and it's funny.
There's very few times in the Lord of the Rings, when they're like, and now it's time for the song.
Exactly, there's no like breakout in song, and... Mm. I think
when they get to Lothlorien, they have the elves singing the lament to Gandalf in the background.
And it's just kind of nice, because it's only when you go and read the books and you realize the amount of songs there are, but you're like, oh, some of these lines are in the movie, and it's maybe one or two lines that are sung by Aragorn or by Gandalf or an elf or something like that.
That's why, yeah, I don't like the argument when people say that Peter Jackson kind of didn't respect some of the things in the book. And he did, and like, I mean, I always think, I mean, it's very difficult to, you know, adapt a book into a movie. You need to, some changes have to be made. And very often I see certain quotes from the book, and you, like when you're reading the book and you realize, I mean, I would say the first time that I went back and read the books, I think I saw a lot of things in there that made me respect Peter Jackson's adaptation even more, because I thought, oh, wow, this is like something that's not in this scene. But obviously Peter Jackson read this part and said, I really want to find a place for this in the movie. And I thought that was really cool.
And an obvious example is Treebeard quoting Tom Bombadil, which is quite, quite famous.
Exactly. That's one of the biggest ones, yeah.
Gnawing, biting, breaking, hacking, burning. Destroyers and usurpers, curse them!
So, on to Minas Morgul, the Tower of Sorcery. So, for our listeners that don't remember this location, or maybe that you just don't know what location this is, would you remind them of which place this is in the movies?
Minas Morgul, yes. This is the Witch King's lair. This is where... we see it in the third movie, just before Sam and Frodo and Gollum climb the winding stair, and Frodo gets kind of drawn towards it. And it's the kind of, it's basically a big giant fortress where the Witch King lives. And also it has this kind of a green glow on it. And then also in the movies, we see this, the part where Pippin and Gandalf are in Minas Tirith looking out and across at Mordor, and they see a huge, explosion of light that flies up into the sky, and that's where we see that happening in Minas Morgul as well. So that's where that is.
Yeah, exactly. So like you said, this is where the Witch King and the rest of the Nazgul actually took up residence. The very nature of the fortress is unnatural, as it is lit with a sickly pale greenish glowing light, and its description in the Two Towers is, quote, "Paler indeed than the moon ailing in some slow eclipse was the light of it now, wavering and blowing like a noisome exhalation of decay, a corpse light, a light that illuminated nothing." Another spine-tingling quote from Tolkien there.
I absolutely love that quote. That is,
we discussed this one quote of my just during the week.
Yeah, we were talking about this possible upcoming episode during the week, and Dave told me he was going to talk about Minas Morgul. And I said, oh, are you going to include the quote about like the corpse light, the light that illuminated nothing? And he was like, oh yes, don't worry about it. I was like, oh, thank God.
Oh, don't worry, my child. And then we said it in tandem.
Exactly. Yeah.
To each other before we went to sleep.
We chanted it. It's now our mantra. I love the way that Tolkien describes that, just that description he gives of this place where he says, wavering and blowing like a noisome exhalation of decay. Like, what? Who writes like that? A noisome exhalation of decay. And then a corpse light, a light that illuminated nothing.
Yeah.
It's just, I love that. A light that illuminates nothing is just an incredible way to describe something. Yeah. I think that's so amazing. Like, so I've always. That's always been one of my favorite quotes from, one of my favorite Tolkien quotes.
And one of
it's a kind of a dark one, but it's a class one.
Yeah. And
other people are going to get tattoos of like, not all those who wander are lost. And I'm like, I'm going to get a tattoo of
a light that illuminates nothing.
A light that illuminates nothing. Yeah. And a noisome exhalation of decay.
That's basically like the lights are on, but no one's home. You should get it tattooed on your forehead.
I think just the words that come out of my mouth already express that the lights are on.
Yeah, and I like how Tolkien, like in that one line, he details so much about the fortress. But there are other details about the fortress. The top tower slowly revolved back and forth with a gigantic ghostly head on top. It was also once a Gondorian stronghold, but like I said earlier, after the Nazgul takeover, it became a city of horror where the minds of living men would run to madness if they remained too long.
Like a haunted house.
Exactly, like a haunted house.
You go to Porta Ventura and go, I would go to pop into Minas Morgul.
Yeah. Also, its flowers are black and misshapen, giving off foul odor. Countless windows that look like black holes leading to emptiness. The entrance of its bridge was guarded by statues of twisted humans and beasts. In the films, I think they're depicted as like terrifying horned gargoyles with like, don't they have like forked tongues that are just like sticking out of their mouths, slithering out. A cold, deep mist lay over its land at all times. And Gandalf also counseled not to go near Minas Morgul, quote, because of the evil that dwelt in the valley, where the minds of living men would turn to madness and horror.
Oh, man. So cool.
Yeah, so...
I think it's really well portrayed in the movies as well, as I said, where in that scene where Frodo kind of just feels... Again, Frodo very often gets, like, drawn into these situations. Of course, like in the Dead Marshes, when Frodo is the one who gets drawn towards the light.
Yeah.
And he falls into the water. And here, he gets drawn again into Minas Morgul. And obviously... Maybe because he's carrying the ring, he gets affected more by this pull from the enemy.
It's
as
almost
well.
Like and evil so, sees evil, and the evil of the ring is like recognizing the evil of this place. And similar.
Exactly. It's because the ring is it knows it's so close to home, and it's pulling Frodo towards where it wants to go. So obviously, if the ring got into the hands of anyone in Minas Morgul, it's achieved its goal. So I think that's really cool. But also just the way that those scenes are shot. I think are really fantastic. Well, the music, of course, the music adds everything to these kind of scenes. But even the camera work's kind of like...
I was just thinking.
It's like a steady cam, but he's kind of like moving over and back.
The close-ups of the gargoyles at the front, it's like sideways nearly. And
exactly.
And then the music
is
so like high-pitching.
As you said, the close-up of the gargoyle is sideways, which just throws you a bit off kilter, and you're kind of like... Right, I'm out of my comfort zone here. I don't really feel like I have a good idea what's going on. And so like that's obviously just to try and play with your mind. So
yeah, exactly.
I think that was really well done.
Like, I don't think either of us are experts in filmmaking, but I'm sure any filmmaker could look at that and be like, oh yeah, there's pretty standard horror elements being used in these kind of shots. Just the way the camera's on its side, the loud music.
I suppose that was Jackson's bread and butter, I suppose.
Yeah, it's true, wasn't it? Yeah.
He was probably like, nice one. I actually get to shoot some sort of horror stuff here now, so I can use all of my techniques.
All my techniques. That'd be very good. Of course, Johnny, this wouldn't be a Halloween episode if I didn't bring up the hurrah moment. Like, which to this day frightens the bejesus out of me. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask your opinion on that.
I enjoyed your impression there. I mean, all of our listeners could hear it, but I was the only one that was lucky enough to be able to see it at the same time. So,
oh, really?
Did I can assure you, I assure all our listeners at home that Dave did a full on Ian Holm scary Bilbo. I think your eyes went a bit dark there as well.
Cool.
But, that scene is so good. Like, I mean, I would say that now, whenever I go back and watch the movies now, I always kind of find it kind of funny because my girlfriend is not able to watch that scene.
Oh, really?
Every time that scene comes up, she has to like kind of hide behind a pillow or something. That kind of makes me giggle. And I have to tell her like when it's over because she just gets absolutely freaked out by the sight of Bilbo. But it still gets me.
Yeah.
It still gets me. It's so good.
Proper jump scare. Like, I wanted to ask as well, what
do we mention what we're actually talking about in case anybody confused?
Let's backtrack here. So that scene, you explain it there.
Well, yeah, so the scene obviously when Frodo and Bilbo are reunited in Rivendell, and you know, Bilbo's given him Sting and he's given him all his stuff, and he gives him the mithril shirt, and he asks Frodo to, he says, hey, you should try on this shirt, see if it fits or whatever. And Frodo starts to unbutton his shirt and suddenly reveals the One Ring. And Bilbo says, ooh, I would very much like to hold it just one more time. And to which Frodo starts to say, this doesn't seem like it's a good idea. So he starts to button his shirt back up. And then Bilbo gives him the old stink eye. And he kind of turns into a demon for a bit of a half a second, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's so cool. It's just like...
I love it too.
So unexpected. The first time you see it, you're like, oh my God.
So we have that scene. We have so far we've talked about Minas Morgul. We've talked about the Barrow Whites. I suppose they're not really in the movies, the Barrow Whites. But what, in your opinion, are some of the freakiest things in Lord of the Rings?
Out of what we've spoken about?
No,
out of
just
the movies, out of the books in general.
Just in general, like what there's like, you know, we've got obviously the orcs and goblins and Uruk-hai, like their kind of makeup and stuff is terrifying, especially if you were seeing it in the cinema for the first time. It's quite horrific, yeah. But there's lots of...
I mean, I suppose there's things in a book that you can read that are like really scary, and there's things that happen in the Silmarillion that are really scary as well. But if we're going to go just off the movies where we get to actually have the visual thing that we can all look at, I mean, yeah, Minas Morgul and all of that is terrifying. But I would say for me, from my own memory of just being terrified while watching the movies in the cinema, was in the first movie when Aragorn and the Hobbits get attacked on Weathertop by the Ringwraiths.
Yeah.
That scene is like, again, it's an incredible scene. It's so fantastically made, but it freaked the hell out of me when I was in the cinema. I remember like the first time I was there, I would have been, I suppose, 12 years old. Jeez, when that first movie came out, and I was in the cinema
seeing these like ghostly, empty faced, black, cloaked villains coming through.
I went to see it in the cinema 3 times because I had to. Yeah, you know, I was.
You shit your pants the first two.
Exactly. I had to close my eyes for the rest of the movie the first couple of times. And but I remember every time I went to see it, I think on every viewing there was like some people that got up and had to run out of that screen during that scene. I think maybe
deadly.
You know, because it was 12s, maybe like, you know, a mother with her child like had to take the child out because they were like crying because it was so terrifying. So it was really like a little horror scene in a 12s movies, in a 12s movie, which was it was really cool. And as I said, as a 12-year-old at that time, I was terrified of it, but I also was like, this is so cool. But yeah, that for me was definitely the one that stuck with me, that scene.
Yeah, and also with the Black Riders, I think the sniffing scene with the hobbits as well, like that's very not just the sniffing and the kind of I don't know, quietness. Well,
you hate bugs.
Yeah,
so,
the bugs.
That's one thing that would definitely kind of add for you.
I think everyone kind of dislikes that scene, just the way like the centipedes or millipedes and like the spiders and everything just crawling around. It's gross. Like
it is. It is gross. But it's much shorter scene, and also it's daytime. So for I mean, definitely again, really really cool scene. But I would say, like you, and again, like you just pointed out there, it is deathly quiet, and there's almost this kind of like this kind of like humming in the background. It seems like it's so quiet that it's loud. It's kind of this weird sort of feeling in that scene. However, in the other scene at Weathertop, the music again, like I said, in the scene with Minas Morgul, the music is just Howard Shore. Just he never disappoints.
No.
And again, that scene when they're fighting and Aragorn's fighting the Black Riders on Weathertop. Just sort of like, like it's incredible. Like it's so good.
Yeah.
If you watch that scene on mute, you're gonna be like, yeah, it's pretty scary. But when you just give that volume and that music, it's like
the entrance of each Nazgul, the way they come in, they come out of blackness.
That is like, that theme is so cool.
Man, in the Fellowship probably has some of the scariest moments of all three, because I think it's like, when I mean darkest movie, I mean like literally there's not that much light. A lot of it is at nighttime. Like even when you see the Nazgul coming in to Bree, that's pretty spooky as well. Like the way they're coming in at night and like stabbing.
And even
the
just the hobbits coming into the Bree, and like they're looking for the prancing pony. And it's like, it's nighttime, it's raining.
Yeah.
They come into this pub, everyone's like a giant because they're so small, and everyone's like, rah, ha, ha. Everyone's just absolutely pissed. Like, so they don't even know what's going on.
Sounds like a great night. I'd love to know what was going on that night in the pub.
It's so funny because when you watch that scene, and from like Frodo's perspective, he's like terrified, and Pippin's like delighted with himself and Merry, and they're like, it comes in pipes. Like they're having just the night of their lives.
Yeah. Also, if we were looking at just the movies alone, a couple of honourable mentions. We've got Galadriel scene when she snaps and goes pure witch-like. That's pretty spooky. I definitely think the Watcher in the Water, again, in the Fellowship of the Ring. That's a spooky scene.
Yeah, you've got that like directly after the just before you get the Balrog scene as well, and the little battle in the mines as well. So lots of scary scenes in the Fellowship. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
the Watcher as well. That's freaky.
Yeah, it is freaky, and like the build up for like the way the water kind of moves whenever anyone's looking away. And what else we have?
Do
we
not
have
disturb the water.
Exactly. We have Shelob's lair, obviously. The giant spider. That's a pretty freaky scene. And at the start of the Return of the King, I can't remember if it's an extended edition or not, but Gollum's transformation, like that's horrible. The way he's like biting into the fish and he's like crawling around. Do you know where it's showing Gollum as he becoming Gollum, I suppose.
I don't think that's extended. I think that was in
is it in the normal
theatrical
one? Yeah.
I think it was in the normal. I mean, it's so long since I've seen the theatrical releases, but I'm pretty sure that was an important part where they wanted to start with him finding the ring, killing Deagle,
and
then kind of turning into Gollum, because he was such an important character in, well, both the Two Towers and the Return of the King. So I think that was definitely in the theatrical release, because it was very important for those movies that we got a good idea of Gollum's backstory as well. But yeah, that's, I agree with you that's it's not scary, but it's just like, it's kind of gross and it's a little bit scary.
It is a bit scary. The way the music is again, and especially the first time you see him really change, and he's like huddled in a corner, and then he turns around.
And he stares. Gross. And he's almost like laughing. Yeah. He's like,
and he's got his horrible teeth, and then the music and the kind of ring theme as well.
He looks kind of like a witch in that scene.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, yeah. It's gross. It's gross.
Yeah, that is actually great. Yeah, I know exactly that exact face he has at that time. So I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
yeah. You can almost hear like like an old cackle. But anyways, we just mentioned Shelob's lair there. Shelob being the giant spider in the Return of the King, or in the Two Towers, if you're going by the book. But if you thought Shelob was bad, arachnophobes, turn away now, because we're moving on to Ungoliant. So, Johnny, what do you know about, or do you know anything about Ungoliant?
Ungoliant was the mother of Shelob, and she was ginormous, basically the size of mountains, basically. She was possibly, like, I mean, there's arguments to say that she was possibly the most powerful creature to exist on the land. Now, because we know that Sauron's boss was Morgoth, and she actually kind of nearly defeated Morgoth on her own at one stage, when they kind of like teamed up at one point, and then she thought that Morgoth was going back on his word, and she kind of she attacked him, and she nearly defeated him until he had to call in the backup of his army of Balrogs, and they all came and they basically freed him from her. She had like grabbed him in a web. And all the Balrogs came in, and they freed Morgoth, and then she scurried away Ungoliant. And so there's an argument there to say that she's so powerful that she nearly defeated the most powerful of all the Valar. Now, also, he wasn't at his strongest point at that time. So for me, I would say she definitely wasn't more powerful than Morgoth. That's ridiculous. But this is the level of power that we're talking about. So
yeah.
Shelob looks like an absolute, like a little ant compared to Ungoliant.
Oh yeah. Like seeing Shelob in the films, it's more of just a big, scary creature, but Ungoliant was like another thing altogether. Like, Ungoliant is it's actually an evil spirit that took the form of a ginormous spider, like you mentioned there. You said like the size of mountains. I couldn't actually find an accurate size of the beast. Like, sometimes I saw an artwork in some people's artwork that it just looked like a really big one, like maybe, I don't know, maybe five times the size of Shelob, like, where, you know, it wasn't humongous, but like, it was still quite big. But then other people seem to draw ones of her being like in among the clouds almost, so it's kind of hard to know. And there's no descriptions online of the size of her or accurate dimensions. But she is so evil that she hates light itself and devours it wherever she can. I think, I didn't write this down, but I think that she like drains the light from the two trees or one of the trees or something like that.
In the Silmarillion.
So evil that she hates light. Official canon states that her whereabouts are unknown, but as in like after what we last see of her, but she fled from
2021.
Yeah, in 2021. We don't know where she is, but she fled from where she resided in Ered Gorgoroth, or the Mountains of Terror, down south of Middle-earth. So that's where she's kind of, that's where she's been or last been seen. Some say that her hunger grew so great that she literally devoured herself. And
I was gonna mention that. I wasn't sure if you'd read that before.
Yeah.
But I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting.
She's so greedy that she actually devoured herself. So that's class.
Yeah, so this spooky spider could still be out there somewhere. There could be a monster just like living down south in Middle Earth and we just don't know about. But she did actually leave behind a gift, which was very nice of her. A breed of giant spiders that bred in Ered Gorgoroth and the valley beneath it. So maybe not the nicest of gifts, but so this place, Ered Gorgoroth, meaning the Valley of Dreadful Death. So I don't know about you, but I don't want to vacate anywhere near a place called the Valley of Dreadful Death. Not even the Valley of Death. It's like the Valley of Dreadful Death.
It's, yeah, this it's not like an all right or an actually quite nice death. It's Dreadful Death.
Yeah. Would you like to go to the Valley of Death? Yeah. I wouldn't mind going to the Valley of Dreadful Death. Okay.
Yeah, but that is the Valley of Pleasant Death.
Ah, Valley of Passing Away. So the next thing I want to talk about are the nameless things of Moria. So do you know anything about these? Because they're not very well known.
I know a little bit.
Okay.
I suppose I know a little bit. I mean, it's been a while since I read about the nameless things. Mm. But Gandalf mentions the nameless things, of course. We know that Gandalf and Aragorn have both passed through the mines of Moria on their own at different points before we get to the Lord of the Rings. But Gandalf definitely mentions that there are nameless things that live underneath the mines of Moria. So there's also speculation online that the Watcher in the Water is one of these nameless things.
Yeah, that basically, I've read that theory actually.
There's been like a crack. There's people that say that there's kind of like this water underneath, like way down underneath the mines of Moria, and a crack developed in the roof, and that let water come up outside, and that's where the pool outside of Moria kind of built up, and eventually that's how the Watcher got out. Because also years and years ago, there used to be no water outside that entrance into Moria.
Actually, there always was a stream there. There was a valley. Mm. And what happened, according to this theory, what happened is there was a blockage and then it dammed up and it became like a lake. And the lake became too heavy that it actually cracked some of the earth below, which is where the Watcher or maybe one of the nameless things resided.
Yes.
And basically that's how it got into the water, which became
exactly.
A lake.
Yes. Very, very good.
But that is a theory. I think that's just
as I said. It's been a while since I researched anything about the name of things. But yes, I think that's what I had heard before, that the water had built up and it had put pressure on this crack at the bottom, and that had opened up, and that had led to give this these nameless things a route to escape. And so that's maybe where the Watcher, again, we are speaking about a theory. This is not set in stone, but that's kind of cool as well. But the other nameless things, as we said, they just are these kind of weird creatures that live apparently down in the depths of the earth underneath the mines of Moria. And we don't really know a lot about them. There isn't much mention of them. There's loads of other theories online that you can find, which are really cool. And if you're interested, you can just Google the nameless things. And if you go into Google Images, you'll find loads of really cool artwork of like fan art.
Fart, we like to call it.
People's imaginations have just kind of run wild, and they've come up with these like crazy ideas of these nameless things. They're just horrible looking,
things of like hundreds
monsters.
Of eyes on this disgusting like humanoid with like one arm longer than
you know.
The
whenever
other.
There's like a movie, whenever there's a movie about aliens or whatever, some weird things, people always like. For example, if you've seen The Quiet Place, the aliens in The Quiet Place are class.
Yeah.
Like, they're just so like. Obviously, they're blind. If you haven't seen the Quiet Place, it's about aliens who are blind, who completely rely on sound and they have to listen. So they've got these huge, big things where, like, well, I suppose you could call them ears but these things that they use to listen with on the sides of their head, yeah.
These side hearing devices.
So, like, I mean, they have ears, but I wouldn't call them ears because they don't look like ears. They're just like these disgusting kind of... I don't know. It's almost like looking at the internal part of a speaker where you see what these things that can catch the vibrations, and they just look absolutely rank. That's what I would say. But they're just really unique in their appearance as well. So that's what you can find online if you look for the name of things.
Those things actually are kind of similar to, I don't know if you've ever played The Last of Us. I know I let you borrow the second one, I think. No, did I not? Okay.
No. I've never played it. No.
So The Last of Us.
I don't think you've lent it to me.
Okay. Well, The Last of Us is it's more of a kind of like zombie game, but the zombies aren't like regular zombies that are people just come back from the dead. It's kind of like there's a virus that infected people and they turn into almost like plant-like creatures. But like the first phase of zombies are just like men that look like they're dead or whatever. And the next part is they turn into like. Their head is gone and instead and they're completely blind and they can only hear, so they use this like clicking they you can hear them going like and they're like clicking to try and like hear things or I don't know, get vibrations. So that really reminds me of The Quiet Place, but man, those games are unbelievable. So, and they're making a TV series of that.
Oh right, yeah, I think you mentioned that before,
yeah, with Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, you did. That's why you were telling me that I need to play the game.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I don't think you gave it to me. You did.
Did I not? I think I ordered you to play the first one first because you need to play the first one. So.
Okay. Which one do you have?
I have the second one, unfortunately.
I don't think you could part with it when you were giving me a few games recently. So,
But anyways, I know we talked a little bit there about The Watcher in the Water, but look, we might come back to that and we'll revisit that in another episode because I think that's another interesting topic. So subscribe to the podcast if you haven't, and you'll get a notification whenever that episode comes out, and every episode for every week. But yeah, about the nameless things, you were fairly bang on there with everything. These creatures aren't mentioned really that much, but their slight acknowledgement is still nonetheless... bone chilling. They are creatures that live, they're ancient creatures that live in the depths of the earth, but nobody knows what they look like. Below the bridge of Casa Doom, there was a great abyss that was so deep and had never been measured. In its depths was the foundation of stone. Gnawing at the roots of the mountain were creatures that lurked around these dark, decrepit depths. They carved out twisted passages. These were the nameless creatures. When Gandalf and the Balrog fell down the chasm at Casa Doom, they came across these creatures and used their tunnels to escape. The weird thing about these creatures is that they are actually older than Sauron himself, and he is one of the first beings to enter the world of Arda. He didn't even know that they existed, so they're just like their own set of things, like, basically. Nobody knows their purpose, whether they're evil or not, if more of them existed across Middle-earth, or whether they were, you know, humanoid? Were they like the Watcher in the Water? Mm. Were they worm-like or beastly? So yeah, they're just like this unknown mystery. So it's pretty dark and scary. And
did you read the theory about how they may have come from the void?
Yes. Yeah, I didn't want to add too much of that kind of stuff. There are lots of theories of where these creatures came from, and that's where Ungoliant is from, isn't it? From the void. And
again, unclear, but yeah, possibly. Yes.
There's a lot of unclear things, but yeah, I think I just wanted to touch on what we kind of know in Middle Earth, and I know there's a lot of backstory yeah. about like where they might come from in terms of before the existence sure. of Arda and everything, but yeah. So you touched on as well Gandalf speaking about these creatures, and Gandalf actually says, "Far, far below the deepest delving of the dwarves, the world is gnawed by nameless things. Even Sauron knows them not. They are older than he. Now I have walked there, but I will not bring no report to darken the light of day." So this makes you think of how frightening they must be if Gandalf fears talking about them, that he actually says that to talk about them will darken the light of day. So I just thought that's
oh.
it's pretty, like I said, bone chilling. Like these things, oh, just the lack of information, and I don't know, it's just like spooky. And you're like, what the hell are they doing there? Why aren't they more involved in Middle Earth? Maybe their part has yet to come.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we'll see them in Lord of the Rings on Prime.
Oh, subscribe to Amazon. Mm. JK.
Are you frightened?
Yes.
Not nearly frightened enough.
So the last scary thing I want to talk about, well, two things. Werewolves and vampires. They make a small appearance in Middle Earth. So vampires in Tolkien's Legendarium are bat-like creatures that can fly. There's no mention of them sucking blood or being pale, onion-fearing counts in castles. There isn't actually much spoken about vampires at all, other than two characters in all of Tolkien's works. So the first is Thuringwithel, the woman of secret shadow, who was a messenger of Sauron. The second I'll get into in a minute, but first I just want to talk about werewolves. The difference between a regular wolf and a werewolf is that werewolves were imbued by dreadful spirits. Werewolves were bred by Morgoth. A quote from Christopher Tolkien's book War of the Jewels: "Wolves there were, or creatures that walked in wolf shapes, and other fell beings of shadow." So Dragluin was the first of these beasts, and his offspring became the werewolves of Angband. Dragluin served Sauron on the Isle of Werewolves. Yeah, that's right. There is a place called the Isle of Werewolves.
Class.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Sounds like old school horror stories. So just a quick story from the Book of Beren and Lúthien. To paraphrase a lot, Beren is trapped on the island, the Isle of Werewolves. Lúthien and Húan come to rescue. Do you know who Húan is, or do you remember?
Húan? Yeah. Húan is Lúthien's hound. It's a great hound.
Yes. Yes, well done.
Like a giant, like it's a hound. Like it's basically a big dog that's about, 15 feet tall.
Yeah, exactly. The Hound of Valinor, Húan.
Mm. And we should also say that Lúthien is the elf maiden, that Beren the man, Beren and Lúthien, they are, a famous couple like Aragorn and Arwen, who are man and elf. And this was the kind of the first partnership of a man who falls in love with an elf maiden. And that's also mentioned in the Lord of the Rings when Aragorn is singing a little song and Frodo asks him what he's singing about. And he says he's singing the Lay of Lúthien, which is the story of an elf maiden who gives her life for this the love of a man. So that's just a little backstory of who she is.
Beautifully said.
Her Hound of Valinor, his name was Húan.
Yes, which is very similar to Juan, which is your name.
That's my name.
Húan. I keep kind of when I'm reading it, I'm like Húan. It kind of sounds like an old Irish name, but it also sounds like Juan. So I'm like the tales of Húan. Anyways, well done. Thank you for that little tidbit there. So Sauron sent werewolves to capture Lúthien, but Húan killed them all. So Sauron decided to send the boss, Dragluin. So after a great battle between the two beasts, Dragluin is fatally injured and returns to his master, telling him that Huon is with Luthien before he dies. Huon was granted special powers by the Valar, and it was prophesied that he could not be killed unless it was by the greatest wolf that ever lived. So remember we talked about the shape-shifting abilities of Sauron in our episode, Who is Sauron Really? Well, if you guys haven't heard it, you can go back and check that episode out. It's a really good one. Well, being the egotistical maniac that he is, this is when he decided to change into a werewolf and fight Huon. So Sauron transforming Sauron into a werewolf.
Yeah, he said, I'm going to transform into a werewolf, and then that will make me the greatest werewolf that's ever lived. Like, as you said, massive ego. He was like, well, of course I'm going to be the greatest werewolf.
So, yeah, it's like Musk is just like, well, I'm the greatest human that's ever lived. I'm just going to do this and I'll be the best at that. Well, I suppose he probably will be. But
exactly. You know. Well, I know, but he could be like, you know, well, I'm going to become, you know, I don't know, a burger flipper in McDonald's, and I'll obviously be the best burger flipper that's ever been. And you're kind of going, well, you know, that's a skilled job, you know, you need to be able to give a flip and flip it the other way. And
a flippity floppity.
Maybe you're not the best flipper.
Yeah, well, it's like when, in the world, you know, Amazon is like one of the biggest companies in the world, and they're known for, you know, selling stuff online and whatnot, but then they wanted to break into the mobile phone business and they created Amazon Fire Plus or whatever it was called, I don't know, and they were like, well, we're the best at this. We're obviously going to be the best at this. So, but like that was a complete failure because obviously they had to deal with the likes of Samsung, Google and iPhone. So you can't just become the greatest thing. But anyways, back to Sauron. Sauron turning into the werewolf, they battled, but eventually Huon actually defeated Sauron. But before he was killed, Luthien threatened to send Sauron's evil spirit back to Morgoth unless he give up the island of werewolves to Luthien. I don't really know why Luthien wanted this island, but anyways,
she had an eye on it for real estate.
Exactly,
like, it's prime location right there.
I mean, who wouldn't want to live there?
With condos.
Yeah. Just set up some schools there.
Wait, did you say Huon wanted to live there?
Who on earth would want to live there? So Sauron did give up the island of werewolves and was released by Huon. This is where Sauron took the form of a vampire and flew away. And I just want to read a quick quote. Sauron took it upon himself, the form of a werewolf, and made himself mightiest that had yet walked the world. And he came forth to win the passage of the bridge. And then after he was released by Huon, immediately he took the form of a vampire, great as a dark cloud across the moon, and fled, dripping blood from his throat upon the trees, and came to Tor na Fuin, and dwelt there, filling it with horror. So there's some more spookiness.
He came forth and he won the passage of the bridge.
I was thinking the same thing.
So what would he have won if he came third?
Hey!
Hey! That's the first time that joke's ever been made. But it was funny that you said he came forward and he won. Was it? What was it?
Yeah, that's it. I was thinking it as I was reading it. Let me see.
I was like, I'm not going to make a joke about him coming forward, but then you immediately followed up by, and he won. I was like, all right, well. Now
Sauron took it upon himself, the form of... Oh, no, wait, sorry. Oh, yeah. And he came forth to win the passage of the bridge. So if he came third, maybe he'd win the gate.
The whole bridge.
Yeah, or the whole bridge itself.
Not just the passage. Yeah. I don't know.
The whole bridge.
God forbid he came first.
Nothing but the bridge. Yeah, and I don't want to dwell on it too much, but there is another famous great and evil werewolf named Karkaroth, who was Morgoth's personally chosen pet. Morgoth even fed Karkaroth with living flesh from his own hand, and thus putting his power into the beast. Karkaroth grew very large, just like all these beasts that we're talking about. And a quote from the Silmarillion reads, "There the fire and anguish of hell entered into him, and he became filled with a devouring spirit, tormented, terrible, and strong."
Ooh. But he was a good boy.
Oh yeah, he
played he played fetch and
he liked belly rubs.
He did his wee wees in the correct places. Yeah. He didn't do his business inside the house.
He sat when he was told to sit.
Yeah, roll over.
I love the way like every you watch Lord of the Rings and you see all the beasts and that and you're like, oh my god, trolls! Look how huge they are. And then you see like Balrogs and you're like, my god! But then like everything from the Silmarillion is like, there was a 900-foot spider and there was like a 1,000-foot hound, and you're like, everything is just humongous. Yeah. Like, so
it was an ant the size of your house.
Good luck to the Lord of the Rings on Prime trying to, I know not all these beasts will be in it, but like surely they're going to have some giant creatures in there. Well.
They have a big enough budget, they can get the CGI. Yeah, that's fine. True.
Yeah, very good.
But as long as it's tastefully done.
Hmm. Very tasty.
Like, I mean, obviously, you know, we don't want CGI faces like in, you know, the orcs in the Hobbit movies, but we do want CGI like what was done to make the Balrog seem more real, because obviously the Balrog would be done with like a mix of CGI and prosthetics, I suppose, or, you know, big puppets, and then CGI for the smoke coming out of his nostrils and his flaming mouth and stuff like that as well. So if they could do anything similar to that for any of these beasts, like to do something similar to what they did with the Balrog,
yeah,
which is, you know, that was 20 years ago. Surely they shouldn't have any problem doing that now.
Why is technology going backwards? Like, what's going on?
I know.
But like, did you hear that?
I think we're in the sweet spot now where it should all be like pretty easy to do and like to be able to do to a fantastic level. So hopefully that's going to be amazing.
They asked, I don't know, do you remember this or did you ever hear it at all? But apparently Amazon were putting out a casting call for like really ugly people to star as orcs in the new series. So...
Oh, that'd be class.
Yeah, but like it's funny. Like, are they not going to give them masks? Are they not going to do CGI things? Like, why do they need ugly people?
Maybe it could be like, I don't know. Maybe it could be like, you know, maybe some orcs aren't as ugly as other ones. Maybe some of them are, you know, horrifying, like we saw in The Lord of the Rings. But maybe some of them are kind of like in between orcs and humans, and they're just like really ugly humans, you know, or really hot orcs, you know, whatever way you want to look at it.
Yeah, you just see a disgusting human, and then there's an orc beside you being like, that would be a really hot orc.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're looking at all these like horrible looking humans and they're just like, you know what? I'm actually a 10 in the orc world.
Oh, that's going to be my new Tinder bio. I'm a 10 in the orc world.
Stop your squealing, you dunghill rat. I'm going to bleed you like a stuck pig.
Okay, so before we finish, I just have one or two little things I wanted to say. Kind of like interesting side facts, but don't worry, won't take up too much time. First of all, Saruman actor Christopher Lee plays Count Dooku and Count Dracula in the movies Star Wars and Count Dracula. So maybe he is a vampire. This is as much as I got.
That's two counts. I count two counts,
yes. Also, a little trivia tidbit on Sir Christopher Lee, his step cousin is Ian Fleming. Do you know who Ian Fleming is?
The creator of James Bond.
Exactly. And Ian Fleming actually based the character of James Bond on his cousin, Sir Christopher Lee. So I just thought that was pretty cool. That's how much of a badass Christopher Lee is.
Christopher Lee, his like CV was like the most amazing thing to read.
Ridiculous.
I'm, you know, in a metal band. I'm the inspiration for James Bond. Yeah. I have Count Dracula. I have Dooku.
He fought in the war.
Saruman fought in the war. Like, yeah, is he met J.R.R. Tolkien. Yeah. What an amazing man! What an inspiration. Yeah. He was also on. He was like number one on the list of most likely to die for like 5 years in a row as well. There's a website which has like people that are most likely to die that when I used to live with a guy who always used to check the website and be like, oh, guess who's top of the list.
Oh my god, that's like off. So morbid, like
it's extremely morbid. Yeah. So there's like I can't remember the name of the website, but there's some website that ranks celebrities, people from like celebrities and like well-known people from like 1 to 100 or something, of like who they think is going to kick the bucket basically in within the year or something like that. And I remember like every year he was like, because Lee's still up there.
Oh my
like,
God.
But then, yeah, so it's a bit of a...
Surely the Queen must thing. Be up there as well.
She's probably been there for a while now, but sure, she's still going.
So the last thing I wanted to bring to your attention and everybody's attention is that scary is not just a word that we use to describe things around Halloween, but it's actually got another meaning in Middle Earth. Would you happen to know what it is?
Ooh, scary. don't know, does it mean hungry if you're a hobbit?
Jeez, I'm fierce scared. Scary is actually the name of a village in the East Farthing of the Shire. So I thought that was kind of weird and interesting and Halloween-y. Yeah.
Yeah, where do you live? I live in Scary.
Scary what?
Scary Town. Yeah, I wonder if they've got any like haunted houses in Scary.
Scary haunted houses. Scary, scary haunted houses.
Yeah. And so this is the scary shop. Yeah. And this is the scary school.
And there's a scary old man. What's wrong with him? No, he's just an old man, but he's from Scary.
He's from Scary. Yeah. This is just a typical Scary family.
Scary family living in the scary suburbs.
Exactly. Living in their scary house.
Yeah. Right, so that's it for today's special scary Halloween episode. Did any of these creatures or stories give you the heebie-jeebies? I hope you're not too afraid to go out at night now, but do let us know if you think that there's something even scarier out there in the Tolkien mythos. If you think there is anything scarier out there, you can find us on Twitter at melon_heads, or check out the rest of our socials in the description below. Also, if you want to help us out even further, you can become a member for just €2 a month on our Buy Me a Coffee account, or even make a one-time donation. Just check the link in the description again. Thank you all so much for listening. Please do hit that subscribe button so that you're notified when the new episodes come out, and leave us a 5-star review and a rating if you can. Have a happy, scary, spooky Halloween, and we'll see you next week.
I've just thought of something scary.
Yes.
The smell of Dave's bedroom in the morning after a night out.
Nothing scarier.